on this edition of The Self-Publishing Show.
You just have to make sure you're constantly pushing things out and keeping on with the advertising and the marketing, because as soon as you take your foot off the pedal, then you see the Amazon bestseller rating. That just plummets as soon as you don't, you know, you're not pushing the needle, basically.
Publishing is changing. No more gatekeepers. No more barriers. No one standing between you and your readers. Do you want to make a living from your writing? Join indie bestseller Mark Dawson and first-time author James Blatch as they shine a light on the secrets of self-publishing success. This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Hello and welcome. It's The Self-Publishing Show on a Friday with James Blatch.
And Mark Dawson, not in focus. And dark.
No. Also, I do wonder if you need a key light, like the Hollywood actresses from the 1930s who brought their own key lights to sets that worked best for them. And maybe a silk stocking over the lens. Is it Vaseline needs to be on the lens?
I'm not in focus at all today. So sorry if you're watching this on YouTube. Hopefully the camera will, if I come over here, maybe it'll pick me up. That's better. There we go. I'll just hide under the microphone arm today. Yeah, much better.
I've tweaked my own focus recently because John, the editor, was pointing out it does a lot of hunting for the right focus, but I've redone the where it looks. It's now the middle of the screen, so you don't want to make it too wide, the focus area.
No one's interested in this, James. Even I'm not interested in that. That's
I reckon people are listening to this thinking, this is why I'm listening to the Self-Publishing Show, for tips on
camera
videography.
Focus.
Okay, what have we got to talk about? A couple of things this week. I'll talk about children's books, which is great, but also just about self-publishing determination and sorting it out and getting things right in the right way and making a success of it with our interviewee. We talked about the Audible issue last week, which is where Audible allowed returns, multiple returns from readers, and authors weren't necessarily being paid for these, or weren't being paid if they'd been returned. And actually, just after we recorded, about 3 or 4 days after we recorded it, there was some movement from Amazon on this issue, was there not, Mark?
Yeah, there was. So, I mean, it's I'm still kind of getting my head around it a little bit. I don't have the full facts on this, but there was a response by Amazon to a letter that was sent by various trade organizations, Society of Authors, Equity, I think, over here. There's quite a few people involved now. And Audible's position is that authors will be paid unless the book is returned within 7 days. I think that's the gist of it. Which is certainly, it's a step in the right direction. I don't think it goes quite far enough in that I don't think there's still any kind of clarity on how many returns are being made, because it's a net figure that's seen in the report. So it's quite hard to work out what the split is between sales in and returns out. So there are some other things as well that are still kind of bubbling away. So it is something that's worth looking at. But it's a good first step from Audible to bring things into line a bit more with what we see when it comes to ebooks. But hopefully there'll be a bit more movement as the days go on.
Yep, a first step in the right direction. We don't always do newsy type items on this. So I did notice someone actually the other week said, you should do more news at the front. But one of the reasons we don't do it, it's exactly what happened in the last week. We're recording this the Friday ahead of the Friday it's going. So it's 7 days, 8 days really, Friday to Friday. And things change. If you do news, you've got to basically do it that day or the day before. So typically when we had a little chat about Audible, something happened and changed. But Facebook groups are the place to go. There's a dedicated Facebook group on this subject. There's 20 Books to 50K. There's SPF Community, which is obviously the premier Facebook group for self-publishing authors. And you can chat and discuss issues pertinent to our world. Okay, what else are we going to talk about, Mark? We have launched, soft launch in the background, half launched, Hello Books. So Hello Books is going to be a reader focused service, issuing emails each week, genre specific, to readers on the genres that they choose of free and discounted books. We are building that reader list now, and we've had quite a good start, haven't we?
Pretty good, yeah. So we've got a guy called Arnas, who we've worked with before with SPF, who's really, really good at Facebook ads. So he's helping us run these campaigns. We've got quite a few campaigns running now. At least I think right now about 15 or 16 different variations for different genres. So we've picked some authors who submitted their books for effectively pre-advertising. So they're getting their books are perma-free, or they've been put down to free for 5 days if they're in select. And we are advertising those reasonably heavily to, first of all, to test that our systems are working and to start to build lists and to, you know, to start finding readers. And it is going quite well. We've had a thriller so far. We've had a couple of romance. We've got sci-fi and fantasy going out today. So we're just trying to, you know, find the audiences and build our own audience so that we can then start to do things like lookalikes and things like that, which are is likely to be effective sources of readers for us that we can grow at scale. But we're not, you know, we're not going to kind of unveil this for a little while yet. We're still beavering away in the background to make sure that the actual website is effective and the email distribution system that you've put together, it works so that readers get what the kind of books that they want. But we will we'll mention this in a bit more detail later on, because it's quite a big deal. We think we might spend about £100,000 this year on advertising to start to build this list up. So it's a pretty significant undertaking for us, but we're quite excited by how it's looking so far.
Yeah, and I think the first 12 months will be a good time as authors to get involved in this, because we are putting money into this. We need it to be successful and not necessarily profitable in that first year. So we're going to be pumping Facebook ads into the deals every week. And so you'll get effectively free advertising. That's certainly what's happening at the moment. Our early volunteers for books are getting, hopefully they're having as good a time as I've had this week on a free deal for our Revelations book, Robert Story's Revelation book. I think we did 400 downloads yesterday, which I was really pleased about. But it was a coincidence of probably being Thanksgiving and people being at home and idly having a look online. I've also noticed a real increase in the value of Facebook ads in the last couple of days, which I guess is probably the end of the Black Friday advertising. But I've picked up a few leads yesterday, one of the campaigns at 11 cents, which I was really pleased about. Best I've seen for quite a while, actually. I don't know if you've seen the same, but Hello Books is obviously doing quite well at the moment.
Yeah, 11 cents is good. Yeah, very good. Yeah, I've just talked to you about giving me some tips.
Yeah. I mean, it's not normally 11 cents, I have to say, but I was happy with that yesterday. And also that was the free book campaign. So that does give you probably a higher churn rate as well. So they're not as valuable, but there you go. There's a different percentage, but there is a percentage of people who will read on and buy, which is the key thing and the reason we do it. Okay, right. Shall we talk about Matt Ralph, and then we can have a little chat about your own children's books off the back of this interview, which is just starting out. So Matt is somebody who had that very typical journey. We've heard it many times before on this show, which is people who start off looking for a traditional deal because that's basically all they know about, and then they discover the world of self-publishing. And for some people, they never look back. Mark, in particular, but also Matt Ralph. He's done a great job in a difficult or a more challenging genre to market in, which is children's books. But let's hear from Matt, and then Mark and I will have a quick chat.
This is the Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Matt, welcome to the Self-Publishing Show. Great to have you with us, and great to talk to another children's author.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Hey, we are looking forward to hearing about your success with children's books and gleaning what we can learn. And I think you've even, if you may have done this foolishly and rashly at the time, you've offered to put together a PDF on things you found out.
Yes, exactly. So I'm going to put together sort of a tips and tricks type of blog post, something like that, explaining what I've learned along the way and some of the things I wish I'd known and the way to publish a book and market it cost effectively, shall we say, without spending too much money.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about the books. And I think it all started in an airport.
It did. So back in end of 2018, so it was December, I was flying to Germany for a long weekend in Berlin, and I was going through the airport and I saw this poster with a sloth on it. And I don't know why, I just thought it was interesting and kind of cute. And I suddenly on the plane had this idea, and it flashed into my head because I didn't have any other distractions, because on the plane, obviously you can't use your phone or anything. And I just suddenly started thinking about a sloth and how would that work if it was a speedy sloth, or quick, and then speedy came because I like alliterations. And I thought Sam the Speedy Sloth or something along those lines. Or I think I originally said Sid the Speedy Sloth. And then I changed the name. And I actually ended up writing the book on the plane in the notes section of my phone. And the first line of the book just sort of flashed into my mind. I don't really know why it just did. And then I wrote the book And then I ended up turning it into a best-selling children's book.
Wow. And there it is. And I can see there's a book two as well, Playtime in the Rainforest. Yeah. So it's is there more to the series?
It hasn't quite come out yet, but I'm planning on writing more. Yeah, the sequel only came out a month or two ago, so they take quite a long time to get everything done.
Well, I can see it's very well reviewed, 100 odd reviews and very high scores. Cover looks superb. So the big question is at that point, how you go from the notes section of your phone, and there's all sorts of things in everyone's notes section, into a product, a commercially viable product. So let's talk through that process. Did you have any background in publishing?
Not really. I about 3 or 4 years ago, I did publish a book a how-to book about how to create your own website. And it was more a sort of a vanity project just to see what it was like, to how you would self-publish and using Amazon KDP and those sorts of things. But I didn't really do anything with the book, and it was kind of a low content book, so it didn't really go anywhere. But it was more a way for me just to see what it was like writing. But this book, Salmon Sea Sloth, was my first proper book, shall we say. I wrote the notes. Like I said, I wrote in the notes on my phone, and I wrote probably about 50-60% on the plane, and then I wrote the rest, I think, several weeks later, once I'd kind of got back round to it and thought about it, because I had so many other things, obviously Christmas and everything, busy time. And then I ended up, I think I left it for quite a long time, so I didn't actually publish it until September 2019, so a year ago pretty much. So it was quite a long time between writing it and publishing it. And within that time, I think I applied to down the traditional route of getting it published with a proper publisher or an agent and getting all the illustrations done. And then I unfortunately didn't get anywhere with it, but I really liked the idea. So I decided to go on the self-publishing route.
Just
looking into that.
During that period when you were chasing a traditional contract, had you organized the illustrations, or you were sort of anticipating getting a contract where that would be part of it?
Correct, yeah. So I hadn't done anything with the illustrations. I was hoping that they would pay for it basically and organize it, because I didn't know how to do that.
Sure.
So when that wasn't an option anymore, because I hadn't unfortunately got any interest, I then looked into how to get illustration, how to hire an illustrator. And I looked into it, and to hire a sort of professional illustrator that you find online, it was going to be sort of thousands of pounds, dollars. And I just couldn't afford that. So then I sort of stumbled across Fiverr.com, might have heard of. So it's a marketplace for freelancers, and it's there's some quite low cost options on there. And I actually ended up finding a lady based in Indonesia, and she does amazing illustrations, and it's actually very reasonably priced. And it was, a lot less, 10 times less, I would say, than it would cost if I'd done it with, someone I found in the UK or whatever. And that's how I ended up getting my illustrations done. And she's done 3 of my books now.
That's amazing. So, and it is something that the internet has opened up, this world of freelancers in wherever they may be, and being able to find them. The illustrations themselves, I mean, they're beautiful. I think they're really nicely done. So how did you go about working with somebody? Presumably to this day, you've probably never met her.
No. It is quite difficult, because obviously on Fiverr, you have to keep everything on the platform. You're not allowed to sort of call them or video chat or anything like that. It has to kind of, they're quite strict about keeping all communication on the platform. And also a lot of people on there, I guess, if English isn't their first language, that also can sometimes be a slight issue. Because a lot of people aren't based in English-speaking countries that are on there. So they speak English, but perhaps not to native level. So that's another sort of complication sometimes. But you just kind of muddle through, I think, when I think with illustrations, luckily, it's all obviously very visual. So we kind of went backwards and forwards and me explaining what I wanted. And then if it wasn't quite right, she would send the sketches through and I would ask her to change things. And she was, really good, and she was really open to doing stuff. But she's so good that she kind of got it first time most of the time. So I didn't really have to do a huge deal. I explained what I wanted it to be, but she kind of did everything else. And she's really good. So I'm really glad I found her.
And I should mention Terry Tatchell at this point, because there are similarities. I don't know if you've heard her interview, but if people are interested in this area, you should listen to this and Terry's interview as well. So I got quite interested. So Terry's produced very similar books. And I think from memory, she also went to the Far East and found an illustrator who she's working with. And I was very interested in that sort of process after that point then. So you have illustrations that come in, but I wouldn't know where to begin in terms of, I mean, I can format a textbook by now using vellum, but as most people can, and the odd illustration in there, you know, sort of black and white.
Yeah.
But how do you begin to put together what's going to be a very nice, needs to be a very attractive object in people's hands?
So I originally tried doing it in Microsoft Word. No go, don't try it. It's really difficult. Word is not meant for that. Maybe there is a way of doing it. I'm not good enough with that sort of formatting to know. So my actual background before I sort of went into being an author was marketing. So I did have a background in using things like Photoshop and sort of graphic design software, but I don't have Photoshop because it's quite expensive, frankly, to use. So I actually use Canva, which I'm not sure if you've heard of.
Yeah.
I think it's an amazing program. I've used it for quite a while now. So basically, it's an online version of kind of like Photoshop. So you can sort of edit images, and there's loads of templates with text and photos and different elements and stock images. I paid for the premium version, so there's a lot more options of what you can do. And basically, you create the page as you want it. So with the, you know, you have the image, and then I have the text underneath. You can obviously format it slightly differently. You can have the text on top of the image, but I kept it quite simple with just a square image on an 8x10 page for the book, and then the text underneath. But then I also did all the design elements. So at the back of my book, I've got activities like spot the difference, word searches. So I created all of that myself using Canva. And then you just download them as images with a PDF and then upload that to Amazon. So it sounds complicated, but it's actually not that complicated in a way. It's almost like doing it in Word, but Canva is just so much easier. And there's none of the formatting weird issues, because you download everything as basically JPEGs or a PDF, so they don't move. Which is the problem in Word, I find. Things tend to just move for no reason.
Yeah, Word has a life of its own. It can be a very frustrating experience. Okay, so you then have all your pages as JPEGs, and you've got the semblance of the book. You then turn that into the various formats. And without jumping ahead, because I think the marketing is going to be the most interesting part of this for many people, I'm assuming you don't, this is more of a physical book people buy rather than read on Kindle.
Well, I would have, yes, it is, you know, because it's for children, and people tend to buy children's books in physical form. But I actually have, just to plug it, have a copy here.
If you're watching on YouTube.
If you're listening, then perhaps not. But so I do have physical copies and in hardback as well. But I have actually found that I do get a lot of Kindle downloads. I'm exclusive on Kindle Unlimited, which we can go into in the marketing section. But I do get a lot of Kindle readers, actually. I actually make quite a lot of my royalties on the ebook versions, which I was actually quite surprised about. But I guess in some ways it's sort of, you know, with digitalization and everything, I guess I can see why. But I still do sell quite a few paperbacks, and the margins are higher on them as well. So, it's the PDF is, you have to use PDF for the paperback, but then for the Kindle version, the ebook, I use the Amazon Kindle Kids Book Creator, I think it's called, which is a free program you can download, and you upload them as JPEGs, and then it converts it into an EPUB Mobi, which is Amazon's file. That's how it has to be, but it's really easy. You basically just upload them onto this software, and it converts them into the right format for you.
So the paperbacks are they POD? Are they Amazon print on demand?
Yes. So I don't have any inventory stock or anything like that. It's all print on demand.
What about the hardbacks?
The hardbacks I do through Ingram.
Okay.
So I didn't actually know any of. So when I first, because I literally got into self-publishing, like I said, I wrote on a plane and then decided to sort of throw it up on Amazon and see what happens. Effectively, I didn't really know that much about what I was doing. And then I could talk about this a bit later in the marketing bit, but it was actually Facebook. I joined lots of these Facebook publishing, you know, publishing groups on Facebook, and people were asking similar questions to what I was thinking. So I was just looking through the FAQs effectively on these pages, and someone talked about Ingram, and they basically distribute in hardback and paperback, which is the bonus. So I looked into it, and they obviously sell into all these big retailers like Barnes and Noble, and then Waterstones in the UK, and Walmart, I think, as well, and all these other big, you know, the big websites. And that's how I did it for that. So I used a combination of Amazon and Ingram.
So you had a busy 6 months or so between deciding that you were going to self-publish and learning how to do it. So you went online and learned what you could. And then did you have all of this in place for the launch day? You had the ebook ready to go, the paperback and the POD all ready to go.
The POD side of it is actually really easy because you just use Kindle KDP. So that part was it. That's just uploading it to Kindle. And I never really considered any other option. I never considered buying, you know, bucket loads of my book and trying to sell them. I just didn't want the hassle. I mean, it's probably a good business model, but I just didn't want the hassle. So that part of it was easy. But the Kindle and everything, yeah, I looked into it, asked a load of people that I knew on the Facebook groups, and they all kind of gave me tips. And then I kind of muddled through. But yeah, I had it all ready, and then for the publishing date.
So everything in place. In terms of the product, what was your marketing plan then? And where did that come from? The same Facebook groups, I guess.
To call it a plan would probably be a bit generous, but I think eventually I created a plan. Because, I mean, my background is in marketing, so you'd think that I would have thought about a bit more. But I think when it's your own things, you don't necessarily think in that way, I think, when you're not in work mode necessarily. But I did eventually realize I had to have a plan. And so I used Facebook, joined lots of groups, did a free promotion on, because I'm part of Kindle Unlimited. So you can do, I think, 5 days per 3 months is the period where you're allowed to do it. And I did free book giveaways and basically just hammered all of the groups that I could find and just said, free download, you know, had the nice cover with my cloth on it. And because it's a children's book, obviously it's quite short as well, so people are more likely to agree to read it and review it for you, basically. Because it's, you know, it's a picture book, so it's only about, you know, 40 pages-ish, something like that. And it's mostly text, mostly images, a little bit of text. So yeah, I basically just hammered that home and tried to get as many people as possible. And that was how I got my reviews to quite a high level. And then I also did some advertising, Amazon advertising, BookBub. I was really lucky. I got 2 BookBub deals, which is apparently it's quite difficult. I didn't really know anything about it. I just sort of applied to it. Once I had about 40 reviews, I think there's a minimum you have to have a certain number of reviews to actually apply. But I was really lucky that both times I got accepted.
Super.
And that really helped.
So you dug out, this is a different set of Facebook groups, places where you thought you'd find some sort of bloggers or influencers to review. How did you find them?
So, well, at first it was just, I basically just typed in sort of free children's book or free book groups. And there were people who the people who were in those groups are just looking for free books. And I just posted a load of, posting, please download my book or something along, something to that effect. That was how I managed to get probably my first sort of 20, 30 reviews. And then it's only now recently that I've started reaching out to influencers on Instagram and things like that. So what I decided was going for kind of what you would call sort of middle tier influencers. So people that are actually likely to respond to you. Because if you try and, go for someone who's got millions of followers, they're unlikely to actually respond to you. So I just looked for people who, in my case, because children's books, I looked for mums, for example, mothers. So I thought that would be a good market to go after, and basically just messaged them and said, would you like a free copy of my book in exchange for a review? And most of the time they came back and said yes.
Wow.
And that was how I would go for people that maybe had minimum 10,000 followers, something like that. And then obviously they would promote it to their audience for free, I guess. I had to obviously pay to send the book to them, but that's not usually that much of a cost. And that was how I really sort of managed to get from 20 or 30 reviews to now I'm on sort of 150. So that was how I kind of really pushed the needle, along with the book club as well. That was a really big help.
Yes. I mean, it's 150 at 4.8. You can't have 5.8. 4.8, you say, yeah, which is very good indeed. Lots and heaps and heaps of five stars. So how did your initial sales go back in September?
So I had a massive spike when the book is new. I think that's true of most Amazon books, that when it's new, it tends to be promoted by the algorithm more, I think. That's sort of what I've gleaned from my experience. So I got to number one in the category on several occasions. It was mostly after a big promotion, so after BookBub, or went on, you know, within the first month, week of release, something like that. And because I'm in a Kindle Unlimited program, so you have to be exclusive to Amazon for the Kindle version, not the paperback, just the Kindle version. I get the page reads as well, which obviously boosts I think it helps with the algorithm to boost you up. And I then won the Amazon All-Star bonus on three or four occasions, which is basically a monetary bonus for being in the top 50 illustrated books on Amazon. So I won that, and you know, the top prize is sort of thousands of dollars worth. So, you know, if you can get that, that's a huge help. And I think then having that kind of kudos, if you like, that does definitely help sort of snowball, and you get more and more reviews. But then things start to tail off the longer the book is up. So you have to push out new content a lot, which is then why I did a sequel.
What about any paid advertising?
I do paid advertising. I actually got into it probably a bit too late. I should have done it from the beginning, but I do Amazon advertising, but quite a low scale. I don't spend much money on it, but I actually find that my tip, if you ever try Amazon advertising, never pay the bid that they suggest.
No.
Always put it down to a really, I do, you know, 10 cents or something like that. And actually it doesn't sound like a lot, but you do get quite a few clicks, and surprising how well it can be received. Even though you don't spend that much, you can still get quite a few sales. So yeah, I do Amazon advertising. I tried a little bit of social media advertising, but I've never really got great results from it personally. It's okay if you're pushing something on social media, like a competition or something like that. But for actual book sales, I've not found it converted particularly well. Amazon advertising is the best, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yes, I mean, Janet Margot, who teaches for us Amazon ads, says the same thing, that the bid price is based on, if you write you mention kettles in your title of your book, Amazon's algorithm literally will be thinking about kettles when it's suggesting the bid price. So it's not exclusive to but that, whatever that, she explains it in the course, but whatever the computer science behind it is, it's not exclusive to books, which is why you often say it will say, you know, recommended £1.25 or something, which clearly is not going to work for a book at
£1.99. No. Anyway, never ever pay. I made that mistake when I first did it. I think I went with the recommended, and it was sort of like it said £1 or $1, you know, depending on which version you used. Yeah, and I think within less than a day, I'd spent $5, £5, whatever it was, in a couple of hours. And I was sort of, oh, God, about to turn them off and so not realize what I'd done.
Not profitable. Okay.
No, not profitable.
So, but the other things you were doing were working, a bit of that organic stuff as well, reaching out to people. And in terms of how that sort of launch went in those first two or three months, was it clear to you that this was going to be a viable thing for you? I mean, can you give us an idea of whether this has replaced a kind of salary for you, or is it, what level are you at?
So I'm now a full-time author and freelancer since June or July of this year. Before that, it was more just a hobby. I'm not making a full-time salary, unfortunately, yet from my writing. I think I've only got, you know, I've got eight books in total, but I think three of them are two of them are my biggest earners, which are the two Sam the Sloth books. And so, yeah, I'm not on a full-time salary yet. I make my full-time salary from my freelancing, which I do on Fiverr, actually.
Oh, there you go, full circle.
Yeah, so it's kind of full circle. I sort of started as a buyer, and now I'm a seller on Fiverr. I do sort of proofreading, editing, and self-publishing advice, consulting, keyword research, things like that. So that's how I make my full-time salary now, plus the books. The books are sort of a nice bonus at the moment, but they're not, it's not full-time. But it's definitely viable if you have lots of books. You know, I think how much I earn on one book, and then obviously if you could have 10 of those, that could then add up quite quickly.
Yeah.
So you just have to make sure you're constantly pushing things out and keeping on with the advertising and the marketing. Because as soon as you take your foot off the pedal, then you see the Amazon, the ASBR, the Amazon bestseller rating, that just plummets as soon as you don't, you're not pushing the needle, basically.
It's like a living beast needs to be fed.
Yeah. I'm constantly checking that thing, and it's probably not healthy, but I do, because, I'm interested, and, it can actually fluctuate massively, even if you just look at the beginning of the day and the end of the day, it can fluctuate hugely, depending on if you've had a big surge of interest for whatever reason.
Okay, so you did a sequel, as you say, that's not been out very long, on Sam the Speedy Sloth. And
I'll just show it just so people can sort of visualize what it looks like. So it's very similar style and everything, but yeah, it's the same illustrator.
And did I notice there's a couple of other books as well?
Yes. So I've got 8 books in total.
Oh, yes.
So my actual first book wasn't Sam the Speedy Sloth. I'd written the Speedy Sloth book, but I actually released another book before that, which I designed exclusively using Canva. So all the images inside the book, I'll just show what it looks like. If anyone obviously is listening just on podcast, it's called Go On, Press It. And it's got a big red button on the front that says on, and there's an arrow saying press it. And basically inside the book, it's for young children. It says, press the button, and then on the next page, it shows you what happens as a result. There's a rocket ship blasting off, or shake the tree. And then on the next page, all the apples in the tree have fallen down. And I created that exclusively on Canva, so it didn't cost me anything other than the monthly subscription. That was the first book I ever did. And then I've done a couple of other ones since then, like a Spot the Difference book. I wrote a chapter book for older children called A Knightess in Shiny Armor. And it's a play on, obviously, Arthur, King Arthur, and Knights of the Round Table. This is the Knights of the Square Table. And it's I did that one. And then I've done a couple of other sort of picture books. I did a joke book as well. So they were all relatively low content and cheap to produce. And then my 3 bestsellers were the ones I got properly illustrated.
And you say that you run low level Amazon ads, low bid, so then that's not a huge part of it. You did a lot of that organic stuff at the beginning, the launch, going into groups, finding bloggers and so on.
Yeah.
What are you doing sort of day to day beyond that to keep the books, as you say, alive and the algorithm still hungry?
So I reach out all the time. Like, I'm doing a lot more influencer reach out now that I've got a decent number of followers, including, messaging you on this podcast. So, for example, things like that, and I think once you have a relatively strong base and it is something impressive to look at with the amount of reviews and things like that, that it's a lot easier to get people to say yes. So I do a lot of influencer reach out. I'm still doing my advertising. Sometimes I'll run free book offers for the ebook, not for the paperbacks. One thing I've actually started doing recently is I do personalized versions of my book. So rather than it being Sam the Speedy Sloth, it's Matt the Speedy Sloth, or James the Speedy Sloth. And then the inside is personalized with the child's name, and then it has a personalized message. And I sell that through Etsy, actually, and it is on Amazon as well, but I've had most success on Etsy. And I've also done merchandise as well. So I've got Sam the Speedy Sloth t-shirts and baby onesies, face masks now. I'm constantly thinking of how you can use what you've got and push it in a different way. And then I have also been looking into the publishing route in terms of being with an actual publisher. I think once you've got a bit more of a following and notoriety, I don't know if that's too grand, but it is a lot easier to then at least get your foot through the door with a publisher or an agent, whereas when you're first starting out, all you've got is a Word document. It's harder sell. So those avenues are things I'm looking into.
How much do you sell the personalised versions for via Etsy?
In pounds. I'm not 100% sure on dollars because I can only see the pound version because I'm in the UK, but I sell them for $19.99 for paperback and $24.99 for hardback.
And presumably it's a template, so it's relatively simple for you to make the changes. Yeah. And
it's print on demand. It's print on demand, obviously. Yeah. It's quite good margins on it. And I think I'm pricing my book competitively with others that are sort of more professional, or as in they professionally make personalized books, these big companies that also advertise on Etsy. So I'm quite competitively priced, and no, I've had really good reviews from it. I do Etsy advertising as well. Okay. So that helped.
So I was just going to ask how the printing's done on that, because you don't, obviously your POD version of your main book, and you don't want to have your bookshelf filled with 100 versions of that. So how does that work?
I use a different print-on-demand publisher that you just do like one-offs, and it's relatively cheap. I had to search quite a long time to actually find one that was going to be economically viable, because otherwise, you know, you can go on these big websites that do print, photo books and personalized books, but they're more for sort of like family albums, yeah, and things like that. But they're very expensive, and you'd never make a margin on it. So yeah, you just have to hunt around and try and find the best deal, basically, on how you can get a print-on-demand book printed relatively cheaply, but also decent quality.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I also noticed you've had one of the books translated into quite a few languages.
Yeah, so the Go On Press It book, I've had it translated into multiple languages, I think six languages, something like that. So I speak quite a few languages myself. I did languages at university, so that helped, but I did get professional translators to do it. And actually my most recent Sam the Sloth book, because the first Sam the Sloth book was a rhyming book, and that's very difficult to translate. So my second Sam the Sloth book is written in just regular prose. And that book I've actually translated into a couple of different languages. And I think the French and Spanish versions are up at the moment, and I'm trying to get some more done at the moment. So it's basically just thinking of, how, like I said, how, using what you've got and trying to use it in a different way, and how you can basically make some more money and reach a new audience.
Yeah, make sure everyone in the world can get to know Sam, or in fact Pedro, as I noticed in Portugal.
Pedro is the Spanish name, and then what is it for the, I can't remember what it is for the French one now. Is it Pierre? I can't actually remember now. I think it's something, I basically try to think of very sort of typical names in that language. But I've got people doing it in sort of like Turkish and Romanian, and you know, all those sort of less common languages. I would have no idea what a name in Romanian would be that begins with the letter that is the word for sloth, because I wanted the alliteration Sam the Speedy Sloth. So you have to think of something that works.
Yes. Now the you mentioned that you are, I guess, have a variety of income now. You do some freelance work as well as the books, and that's it. Also, I think interesting to people who are trying to get to a position, particularly in the sort of COVID world of, you know, working from home and having a streams of income. Have you leveraged the skills that you've learned through the self-publishing? Is that what you're offering other people through those Fiverr.com, etc.?
Partly, yeah. So, for example, my main part on Fiverr, the main sort of thing I do on Fiverr is editing and proofreading. So I guess that was helpful in my self-publishing, but I didn't learn it through self-publishing. Because I worked in marketing and PR for 6 years. So I was already sort of quite good at that. But I offer keyword research for books, which is, I've definitely learned that because I've had to do it for myself. For my own books, and I also do sort of consulting effectively for helping people with their self-publishing questions, which again, obviously I wouldn't know if I wasn't doing it myself. So yeah, I've definitely leveraged the skills and thought about how I can use the skills that I have and, you know, how I can help people to do that and then obviously earn money by doing it.
And does that produce a regular stream of, is that a good stream of income for you? Do you have to advertise on Fiverr.com? Do you have to pay to be higher up in the listings, etc.?
You can only advertise and pay to be hired in the listings once you're quite well established. So at Fiverr's quite, they want everything to be relatively organic, but you can. So I'm now what's called a level two seller. I've been a level two seller for a while, which is it's not the top, it's one down from the top. And it's judged on how many reviews you've got, how much you've earned on the platform, things like that. But I got to that quite quickly. And I'm now actually a Fiverr Pro seller, which is a sort of a separate program, which is just for vetted professionals. You have to go through a rigorous application process. I think only 1% of people actually get in that apply for it. So I think having that helps, because obviously you look more bona fide, and I've got quite a lot of reviews now. So yeah, you do have to, it takes a while to sort of get your first couple of reviews, but once you've got sort of five or six reviews, you then see that it starts to snowball and you get quite a few inquiries as well. And then the advertising on Fiverr, I've tried it a little bit because I actually only got access to it maybe about a week ago. Personally, I've not thought it was particularly useful, or it didn't convert very well for me. Perhaps I'll look into it more in the future, but I found that I get enough organic inquiries.
Yeah. Well done. You've gone from a standing start, or walking through an airport start, to being a published author who's has made a brilliant success of it. So you're going to put together something for us. I think you're going to aim this at people who want to get into children's books. Can you give us a sneak peek of what this will be?
So I'm going to put together some sort of document about what I've learned so far from self-publishing a children's book, and sort of the tips of how to do it in an economical and cheap way without spending too much money, and also some of the mistakes I've learned along the way and how you can avoid those mistakes.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'll put it up on my website as well.
We'll get that. We'll create a URL, which I always make up on the spur of the moment, and then have to remember to tell John Dyer so he does all the back end of it. But it will say selfpublishingformula.com/children's, plural, children's. And
children.
Children. We mustn't confuse people. Children's. What John does is he does both. Because he knows the we say
that's,
one.
That's very good. That's very diligent.
Yeah, he does. He'll do both just to make sure we catch everyone. But people are to download that. And what's next for you? Is there going to be any more Pedro / Sam?
Hopefully, I'm always thinking of ideas. I haven't had a chance with everything else I've been doing to actually write a third in the series. But I'm hoping to, and I'm trying to go down. Find an actual publisher now. I'm trying to sort of go down that route to see if that will work. So fingers crossed, and watch that space to see if anything happens on that front, but nothing yet. So I'm planning on doing sequels and then trying to, you've got to go where the money is. And obviously that's my bestseller. So you've got to sort of try and push that as much as you can, then think of other ideas. I always just try and think, where's the money? What's going to work and what isn't? And you have to basically test it and see. There's no guarantees, unfortunately.
Work smart, put the effort in the best possible place. And, traditional versus self-publishing obviously is a bit of a debate and an area. And Mark always says that sometimes one's right, sometimes the other's right. It's not a binary thing. But I imagine with the economies of scale involved in printing within the traditional industry, in a way it's almost easier for them to make money out of a children's book than it is for a self-published author, as you say, because printing on demand is probably 2-3 times the cost of a mass, whether it's a Far East factory or here in the UK, the clay and so on. You can tap into those economies of scale and that might well
and
work.
It's the colour as well. It's the colour, that's what really kills you, because it's the colour printing. That's the killer.
Or is the colour a bit lacklustre on the POD, is what you're saying?
I think they're actually really good, but as in it's that's what drives up the cost.
Oh, I see. Yes, I'm with you. Yeah.
The actual quality. No, the quality is fine.
Yeah, it's just expensive
on
to
Amazon.
Do.
No, on Ingram, you have to make sure I go for the top quality everything, because you can choose the options of like paperweight and ink and things like that. So always go for the top, otherwise they don't look very good. But Amazon, they don't have any options. But Amazon's printing is really good. It's very vivid colors and everything.
Yeah,
I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I've been very impressed. We've had coloured books as well, which I ordered just because I was amazed that they were being printed so well on POD, and they've been really good quality. Great. Well, Matt, thank you very much indeed for sharing your experience over the last year or so putting together these children's books. I'm really pleased that they're making money for you. As you say, it is something you have to be basically every day. You have to be looking at it and thinking about what you're going to do for tomorrow. But that's what... when you're a publisher, whether it's your own books or somebody else's, that's the world you're in. And we look forward to seeing what else is going to happen to Sam.
Yes, stay tuned. That's how you find out.
Yeah, and it'll happen quite speedily.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll see. He's probably speedier than I am. But
brilliant. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you very much.
This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
There you go. I was really interested in the nitty-gritty, as you could probably tell during that interview, of how he got his illustrations and how the printing worked and the cost per unit and all the rest of it. So I hope that level of detail was of interest to people. And Mark, you have made some progress this week on your own children's book.
Yeah, I have. So I mentioned it before, we will get Alan on the podcast a bit later on, but I've been working with a very excellent kids writer called Alan Burrows, who has been published traditionally before and also as an indie. And I had an idea for some stories. Alan thought he could write them, and he has done. We've got two in the bag now. Stuart Bache is involved. He's drawn the cover, which is gorgeous, as you'd expect. He's also drawn illustrations inside and a map, because it's set in South Wales, where I come from, or near where I come from. And we're really pleased with it. I formatted it in vellum yesterday, just because I hadn't done illustrations before. It's so easy. I mean, you know, it's just so ridiculously easy. It took 20 minutes to do a format of book I've never done before. Vellum is just that good. So we have that. Now, the next thing is that we're thinking about, well, I'm thinking about really, because this is kind of my area of responsibility, is how we're going to distribute the book. And the options are to do it all myself, so get my team to kind of get the books out there, look at indie bookstores, that kind of thing. Ebooks obviously is a different thing and easier. To get a third party involved to effectively represent the book to the trade, so to get them into the supermarkets and the stores. And we think that there's a guy I know who is very good at doing that, has done it for some other indies, so that would be an option. And the third option, kind of 3A and 3B, is to use a similar arrangement that I have with Welbeck, my publisher, for the hardbacks of the Milton books and the paperbacks of the Milton books. And I sent the book over to the director there, and just as a courtesy, really, to see whether he'd be interested. And they're all very interested. They really love the book. So they've actually made an offer this afternoon as we record this. And there'll be either a traditional deal whereby, you know, I get an advance. Most of that would then go to Alan, obviously, because Alan wrote the book. Or the alternative is to do it as a joint venture, which is kind of what we do with the Milton book. So the deal is I put in the IP, they put in the marketing, their distribution, the cost, you know, the money effectively, and then the proceeds are split 50-50. So we're still kind of weighing that up. I think it will be out in ebook before Christmas. So I want to get it out before Christmas, just so that I think some readers, even adult readers who like the Milton series, will buy that, because it is quite fun and nostalgic. Obviously, if it's in KU, it won't cost them anything to do that. So we'll do that. And then if I decide to do it myself, then I would have KDP print books available, because I think the split for kids books will be about 95% print, 5% ebook, whereas normally for me that's almost entirely inverted. So it'd be 5% print, 95% ebooks. So I think, you know, we need to get that thing squared away first of all. But it's been fun. It's a fun project. Alan's been a joy to work with. Getting the illustrations from Stuart was fantastic. He's just so talented. He's probably listening to this now, so we're making his head bigger, but he's so talented and nice to work with. It's been the whole thing has been really fun to do. Plus, of course, sorry, I'm waffling here, but I didn't, I'm doing a blatch, not letting you talk, but the book is going to be F.S. Dawson is the name of the author. So it's kind of a pseudonym, but the F stands for Freya, the S stands for Samuel, and they're both, Freya especially has been very involved in the kind of the process. I wanted her to see what I do, and to feel that, you know, she's had some impact on the story. She's made some suggestions that we've taken into account. She's helped design what the characters look like. And I want her to be able to kind of hold the book up and say, the F there, that's me. So, you know, and if it's in, and obviously if it's in Waterstones, she can take her friends there and show her that. So, you know, and I can go and talk at the school and things like that. So it's kind of I'm not expecting to get rich off this, but I think it's going to be a really, in a different kind of richness, you know, kind of who knows.
I was thinking when you just talked about Freya that you cut to 30 years in the future where there's a high court case and Freya's playing out this podcast to show that she was instrumental.
God, if I said something on a podcast that would get him into trouble, he would have thought that was possible.
The only safe way is never saying anything. We're Not those people. Okay, good. Well, that sounds great. Looking forward to it. I shall buy a copy and inspect it before Christmas.
Yeah,
I mean, you've got your sitting audience who, on the face of it, you think are not the audience for this book. But on the other hand, a lot of them will be parents or grandparents. Yeah, more likely.
Thing is, it's unlikely there'll be a thing that they can give as a present. I mean, you can't really give an ebook as a present at Christmas time. You couldn't really unwrap it. It would be a pretty shit present. But you know, I think there will be some folk who would like to read it. I mean, it's a fun jaunt. You're kind of a Famous Five, Secret Seven type nostalgic trip set in a very 1950s town that you know. Is quite well, mm-hmm. Southwold is very is a good setting for this. So hopefully it will kind of tug on the heartstrings of the my existing audience, but is aimed very squarely at their kids and grandkids. So
ginger ale.
There'll be lashings for sure.
Yeah, it's that sort of book.
No, that
that's your next. That's your next venture. Good. Okay. Well, that sounds great. Well, good luck with that. Excellent. Thank you very much indeed, Mark. We talked about Hello Books earlier. Is there somewhere people can go? I'm trying to think now. Authors who are interested in being involved at this stage, they can sign up at hellobooks.com. I think no, selfpublishingformula.com/hellobooks.
Yeah.
I don't think we've released the domain yet.
Well,
people could guess that.
It's a bit obvious.
I have no idea what's actually on it. I will know after this podcast has been recorded and have a look. But selfpublishingformula.com/hellobooks. In fact, I think probably we've got Divert on the main domain to that. And you can sign up and make sure that you are in the loop for when we do launch. And if you just keep an eye on the group, because every now and again, Mark posts in there and says we need some X books to start promoting and building our list. And you get a bit of, quite a lot of free publicity and some powerful Facebook ads behind your book if you get selected from that. Right, that's it. I'm going to jump on my mountain bike while the sun is still just above the horizon. Try to get some fresh air and head into the weekend. And that's it, I think, for me. So all that remains for me to say is it's a goodbye from him.
And a goodbye from me. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get show notes, the podcast archive, and free resources to boost your writing career at selfpublishingshow.com. Join our thriving Facebook group at selfpublishingshow.com/Facebook. Support the show at patreon.com/selfpublishingshow. And join us next week for more help and inspiration so that you can make your mark as a successful indie author. Publishing is changing, so get your words into the world and join the revolution with the Self-Publishing Show.